bank account, knowing that I'd seek my brother's help. He knew it would be easier to kill me in Europe than at home.
That makes no sense, Highness. If he suspects that you are involved with ISIS, why wouldn't he go to the king? Why wouldn't he just arrest you?
You don't understand, Bin Musaid responded, weakening quickly. I was just the messenger. He's afraid that if the CIA takes me, I'll reveal that he was behind all of it.
Behind all of it? Rapp repeated. Are you telling me that Ali Nassar is coordinating support for ISIS?
Bin Musaid nodded.
Who else is involved?
The prince didn't respond.
Answer me, Rapp shouted. The king will take care of Nassar, but if I don't know who the others are, I can't stop them from killing you.
I don't know, Bin Musaid sobbed.
He must have said something. Wealthy businessmen? Other royals? Government employees?
The hospital,
Bin Musaid said in a voice that was barely audible.
You have to get me to the hospital.
He didn't have much more time, and it was likely he was telling the truth about not knowing more. Why would Ali Nassar tell this useless piece of shit anything? Rapp tightened his hands on the wheel and focused on putting a little distance between him and the chasing vehicle. He wasn't going to be able to shake them completely, though. The Volvo was a surprisingly capable car, and the man behind the wheel was either going to stay on their tail or die trying. This situation was unusual in a fundamental way, though. For once, they weren't after him. He hammered his foot onto the brake pedal, slamming Bin Musaid against the dashboard. Rapp kept his eyes on the headlights growing in his rearview mirror as he reached for the passenger door handle.
What are you doing?
Bin Musaid managed to say before Rapp threw open the door and shoved him out.
Stop! What?
Rapp accelerated away, turning on the stereo and leaving Bin Musaid lying in the road. In his rearview mirror, he saw the Volvo come to a stop in front of the prince, illuminating him in its headlights as the man in the sunroof emptied a full clip into him. After that, they hooked a U and disappeared back up the road. With his immediate problem solved, Rapp dialed Claudia.
Mitch, are you all right? I'm not getting a GPS signal from you.
I'm fine. The transmitter probably got shot.
Where are you?
About 7 miles south of Terry's, getting ready to head back.
No, don't. All the terrorists are down and Gracia and Donatella are out.
Do they need a pickup?
They're fine on foot.
What about Kent?
He's okay. But he had to get out of the apartment fast. There's just no way to make that rifle quiet. I heard you have the prince. Is that true?
I lost him.
What do you mean, lost him? He's not a set of keys. How could you have lost him?
Rapp slowed to the speed limit and opened a window to try and clear the smell of Bin Musaid's damaged bowel. Long story.
Chapter 30 Rapp eased the BMW to the edge of the dock and looked both ways. It was empty of pedestrian traffic at this hour, and most of the yachts moored near his were dark. The inevitable exception was the one inhabited by the tireless rich kids. They were on another tear, but it wouldn't be a problem for him. Even if they noticed the BMW and managed to make out the small arms damage, they'd never remember it in the morning. He turned left, trying to keep his engine noise down. Claudia was standing on the yacht's stern, and the gangways were in place. He was barely on board before she started retracting them and closing the stern railing. Living up to his reputation for efficiency, their Congolese captain immediately began motoring out to sea. Claudia opened the car's passenger door and backed away at the sight of the blood.
"Did you do this?"
"He got hit in the bar," Rapp said, stepping out and talking quietly over the top of the vehicle. "They were chasing me because of him, so I tossed his body out." Not entirely the truth, but close enough.
"But you're all right, and by that I mean completely uninjured."
He nodded. "What about the others?"
"Same. Kent is on his way to France on the motorcycle. Donatella is on a train to Italy, and Grace's company is sending a jet for him. He'll take it to his house in London. Then, after things calm down, they'll all make their way back to Africa.
And us?
We'll detour over some deep water to get rid of the car, and rendezvous with them next week.
It took some effort, but he finally managed to get Bin Musaid's blood off him and down the drain. Leaning into the hot water, he let it pound on the back of his head, forcing Claudia to raise her voice to be heard. She was sitting on the granite counter with a portable computer on her lap.
It's on pretty much every television channel in the world, Mitch. There's some shaky cell phone footage from the parking lot, but nothing of you yet. That's not going to be true of the interior security cameras. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to shut them down.
It was another drawback to having left the government. Kennedy could have seriously limited access to that security video. Now it was likely that the local police were already watching it, and by dawn Interpol, the FBI, CIA, MI6, and Saudi intelligence would have copies. It wasn't going to be long before he was identified.
16 dead, she continued. More than that, wounded. The authorities are holding back the names, but an unofficial list is starting to circulate. There are some very wealthy and powerful men on here, Mitch. This is going to get a lot of attention. Do you know who the shooters were?
Iraqis.
Not a coincidence, I assume.
No, the fireworks were just for show. They were after Bin Musaid.
Who sent them?
His initial reaction was to lie. Not because he thought she didn't know how to keep her mouth shut, but because he wanted to protect her. Unfortunately, it was a little late for that now.
Ali Nassar, the Saudi intelligence chief.
Rapp turned off the water and grabbed a towel.
He's behind the Saudi financing of ISIS. Bin Musaid was just one of his delivery boys.
Why? Bin Musaid died before he could say. My guess is that, with all of Saudi Arabia's internal problems, Nassar thinks ISIS is going to come out on top. He wants to be on the winning side.
Did the prince live long enough to give you the names of anyone else involved?
No, and he wouldn't have known anyway. Nassar would play that pretty close to his chest.
What about King Faisal?
I doubt he'd be part of this. I've known him for years, and he's just looking to run out the clock. But wealthy businessmen who want to cut deals, royals who want Faisal's throne, government officials looking to move up the ladder? The list of Saudis who have reasons to sympathize with ISIS isn't exactly short.
All right. I'll start working on Nassar's history, known associates, and financial condition. Any chance you'd consider contacting Irene?
I'm good, but I don't have her resources.
He shook his head and pulled on the clothes she'd laid out for him.
The only evidence I have against Nassar is the word of a little pissant who's getting scraped off the road right now. I agreed to get myself into this, but she didn't agree to come along.
Okay, I'll handle it.
Carefully, though, right, Claudia? Nassar might be a terrorist son of a bitch, but he's a smart one, with an army.
Chapter 31 Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. The knock on Ali Nassar's bedroom door was hesitant, but insistent. Not his wife. Even in an emergency, she would go to the staff before disturbing him. The clock read 3 a.m. He rolled from bed and put on a robe before striding through the darkness to the door. As expected, the head of his security detail was standing on the other side.
What is it?
Your assistant just arrived, Director. He says it's critical that you speak.
Nassar nodded. Show him to my study. I'll be there in a moment.
Right away, sir.
Nassar pulled on a pair of slacks and a collared shirt before starting for the office he kept at the back of his home. Enough lights had been turned on to allow him to navigate, but not so many that the activity in the house would be obvious. These kinds of surprise meetings were kept as quiet as possible. What was so important that it couldn't wait another 3 hours until he arrived at the office? A successful terrorist attack on the homeland? An action by the President of the United States? The death of the king? When Nassar entered the office, he found Hamid Safar pacing its length. "Sir, we have reports that Prince bin Musaid has been killed." Nassar felt a profound sense of relief, but didn't show it. "How?" "A terrorist attack at a private club in Monaco." "A terrorist attack? Do we have details?" "There appear to have been 10 men in total, all armed with assault rifles. They took out the security people and forced their way in, then proceeded to kill or wound a significant portion of the clientele before being killed themselves." "By authorities?" "No, sir." "Then whom?" "That's a difficult question to answer," he said, placing his laptop on Nassar's desk and opening it. "We just received raw footage from the security cameras. Can I go through it with you?"
"Of course."
It started with an outdoor feed depicting the terrorists getting out of their cars and beginning the assault. All was proceeding as expected, until one of them was thrown violently back into one of the vehicles.
"What happened there?"
"3 of the men were killed by 50-caliber rounds fired from the upper floor of an apartment building 500 meters to the east. European authorities have identified the apartment and found the weapon, but they don't think they will be able to trace it. We have some poor security camera footage of a man leaving the building, but it would be impossible to use it for identification purposes."
"Why would there be an unknown, highly skilled sniper set up to fire down on a terrorist attack that no intelligence agency was aware was going to take place?"
"The authorities are working under the theory that the shooter was a member of one of the patron's security details."
"It seems like a rather extraordinary measure for someone going to a nightclub."
"Agreed. Further, we have a list of the members who were there that night, and none of them would have security that elaborate." Safar started the video again, depicting a terrorist being hit in the side and spun around.
"That wasn't a high-caliber round," Nassar commented.
"No, sir. There are 2 effective shooters. The sniper, and 1 of the drivers in the parking lot." Nassar watched the gunfight play out. When all the terrorists outside had been killed, a man appeared and ran for the doors. Safar paused the video. "We assume that this is the other successful shooter."
"A security guard for 1 of the men inside?"
"We're not sure." The video switched to an interior view, displaying the chaos in a steady flow of changing angles. 6 terrorists entered. 1 is already dead at this point, but it's unclear who fired the shot. "Watch the left side of the screen." A man ran at incredible speed across the frame, 1 hand over his head and the other holding a pistol. He aimed awkwardly and fired, surprisingly taking out a terrorist firing at a booth full of young people.
"Have we identified that man?"
"Yes, sir. His name is Grisha Azarov, a well-regarded energy consultant from Russia. Have you heard of him?"
"The name is vaguely familiar.
His company has done work for Aramco, no?"
"That's correct."
The man who had crossed the parking lot came into the frame, sliding on the floor toward an injured terrorist and calmly pressing a Glock to the back of his head before pulling the trigger. The camera angle changed, and finally Prince bin Musaid came into view. He was wrestling with a woman whose purse appeared to be on fire.
"Who is she?"
"We don't know. Most likely one of the whores who frequent the establishment." A moment later, the man from the parking lot appeared and began pulling the prince toward the door. "Here," Safar said, slowing down the video. "This is where bin Musaid is hit." The impact was obvious, but it was difficult to tell exactly where the bullet had penetrated. The man from the lot threw bin Musaid over his shoulder and ran, eventually getting picked up by the exterior camera before disappearing into the parking lot. "So the wound the prince suffered was fatal?"
"We can't be certain, sir. He was driven away and later found riddled with bullets in the middle of the road.
Was the man who took him from his security detail?
No, sir. They were both killed in the parking lot.
Safar's nervousness seemed to be growing, and Nassar's agitation grew with it. Mullah Halabi had said he would deal with Bin Musaid, but had made no allusion to the fact that it would be done in the context of a terrorist attack, targeting some of the wealthiest men in the world. And to make matters worse, his lackeys hadn't killed the prince cleanly. It was possible that he had survived for some time with his rescuer. If he wasn't part of Bin Musaid's detail, then who was he? Even with limited footage, it's obvious that he's highly trained and has significant combat experience. A man like him would be known to the world's intelligence community.
Safar minimized the video and brought up another. Instead of being designed to give an overview of the attack, this one had been spliced together to focus on that one shooter. The additional footage confirmed Nassar's initial analysis. Even in his years in the Special Forces, he'd never seen anyone who could match the man's speed, accuracy, and flawless instincts. He didn't hesitate. He appeared to be immune to the confusion of battle, and he never missed. Unfortunately, he also seemed to have a gift for keeping his face from lining up directly with the establishment's cameras.
Safar switched to an unrelated video that appeared to depict an American military operation in an unidentifiable Middle Eastern village. The shaky footage, probably from a helmet-mounted camera, detailed an ambush and the desperate battle that ensued. All the soldiers fought well, but there was a man who stood well above the others. Despite the poor quality of the image, it was clear that he was the same size and build as the man in Monaco, and that he wore his hair and beard the same way. More importantly, he had the same icy calm and the same graceful, economical way of moving.
"What you're watching now," Safar said, "is a rare and highly classified video of Mitch Rapp in combat."
Nassar felt his mouth go dry.
"How long was Bin Musaid in the car with him? Tell me!"
Safar fumbled with the computer, pulling up Google Maps and making the calculations based on where they'd found the Saudi prince's body.
"No more than 4 or 5 minutes."
Nassar pressed his palms against his temples, feeling them begin to throb. If Bin Musaid had been conscious, he would have been confused, terrified, and in pain. An easily exploited situation.
Rapp would have told the prince that he'd been sent there to protect him, but that he couldn't do so unless he knew who was behind the attack.
How much could Bin Musaid have revealed over the course of 5 minutes?
"We need more than speculation," Nassar said, trying to keep his voice even. "I'll be at the office in 1 hour. And I want facts, names, and options. Further, we're going to have to calculate how to present this to the king. Obviously, there will be no mention of Rapp's potential involvement. Eventually, the other agencies will identify him. But for now, we have some time."
Safar was already packing up his computer.
"I'll see to it immediately. Is there anything else?"
"Find Azarov, and use our contacts at the CIA to get a location on Rapp."
Safar disappeared through the door as Nassar eased himself unsteadily into the chair behind his desk. By all reports, Rapp had resigned from the agency. Was it possible that he'd gone rogue? That he had been following the prince of his own volition, and thus had been present for the attack by Halabi's men? Or was it something far more dangerous? Was his retirement just disinformation, created by a CIA that was supporting this operation? His phone rang, and he immediately recognized the number. His decision to pick up, though, took another few seconds.
"Yes."
Mullah Halabi's voice sounded uncharacteristically upbeat.
"I understand that you've been briefed on recent events in Monaco."
The fact that the man knew this so quickly added to Nassar's anxiety. Did he have people watching the house? Was it possible that Nassar's personal guards, perhaps even his trusted assistant, were among the man's many disciples? "I have," was all Nassar could get out. "A magnificent operation, wouldn't you say, Ali? Not only is your prince dead, but all those infidels as well." "Bin Musaid wasn't killed." "You're misinformed, Director. When my men left him in the road, he was little more than a piece of meat." "But he wasn't killed immediately," Nassar said angrily. "The man who got him out..." "Yes. We believe it was Mitch Rapp." "Indeed," the mullah said, sounding even more gleeful. "Wonderful. Can you feel him, Ali? Can you feel Satan's breath on your neck?" "I can. Every second of every hour. The day that you lose your sensitivity to that searing wind is the day that God no longer sees you." Chapter 32. West of Carbonia, Sardinia. "What happened to the BMW?" Claudia said as she walked into the yacht's galley. "Bottom of the sea," Rapp responded, sliding a cup of coffee toward her.
"That was my job."
"You were dead asleep. I also called your pilot. He'll have the jet waiting for us in Malta." She pulled her robe up around her neck and pointed to the potato he was chopping.
"And you're making breakfast? I feel like I'm not earning my money."
"I'm not paying you."
"In that case, I'll have an omelet."
He walked to the refrigerator and began digging around for some eggs. She'd been up half the night putting together everything she could on Ali Nassar, although they hadn't yet discussed what she'd found. Rapp had considered telling her about the deal that was struck with the Saudis after 9/11, but quickly abandoned the idea. It was one of the ugliest skeletons in America's closet, and she didn't really need to know.
"Maybe I should do that," she said, watching him pile ingredients on the counter.
"Have a little faith."
"I'm skeptical by nature."
"Did you find anything interesting on Nassar?" She took a sip of her coffee while he looked for a pan.
"I did. But then I considered throwing it all into the sea."
"Why?"
"Because this wasn't the mission, Mitch. You were going to coerce Bin Musaid into pointing a finger at high-level Saudis involved with ISIS, and
he did that.
But it isn't a group of minor royals or wealthy businessmen. It's the director of Saudi intelligence. That's a fundamental shift in the mission."
"It's not a shift. Just a change in scale." "Mitch, do you want out?" he asked. It would be impossible to hold it against her. While she'd worked for some fairly high-profile targets in the past, none were anything like Nassar. She stared at him for a few beats before speaking again, without directly answering the question. Whether that was because she wasn't sure, or because she was insulted by the question, he didn't know. Probably best to let it go for now.
"I wasn't focused on Nassar's personal history because I assume you're already aware of it. His modest upbringing, his education in the madrasas and then Oxford, his time in the Saudi Special Forces."
"Yeah, the agency's been keeping an eye on him since he was a young officer. He was always going places, though I don't think any of us would have guessed that he'd replace a royal as head of the intelligence directorate. I assume you looked into his associates."
She nodded.
"And?"
"I've come up with a good list, I think. The most important name on it is Maya Zaman."
"Who's he?"
"A childhood friend and his roommate at university. They continue to maintain a close friendship, and Zaman is both extremely wealthy and extremely religious. By all reports, he's also quite intelligent."
"So a completely different animal than Bin Musaid," Rapp said, cracking a couple eggs into the pan he found.
"Absolutely. While Nassar would have tolerated the prince to access his money,
His relationship with Zaman would be very different. He'd have to treat Zaman as an equal. So Zaman might actually know something about Nassar's network and methods. If anyone does, it would be him.
Any other frontrunners?
A few. But one is of particular interest. Ahmed El-Hashem, the number two man at the Saudi embassy in Paris. He's rich, well-connected, and seems to have an unusually close relationship with Nassar. He's also heavily connected to the Bin Laden family, and was a close friend of Osama when they were young. Just the kind of man I would recruit if I were Ali Nassar.
Rapp lowered the heat on the stove. In order to move against someone like Nassar, I need more than Bin Musaid's deathbed confession. At this point, we have to assume that the CIA and MI6 have ID'd me from the Monte Carlo security camera footage. If that's the case, it won't take long for that information to filter to Nassar. And when it does, we need to be paying attention. If he's guilty, he's going to start getting rid of anyone who can finger him.
They're not the only people he's going to try to get rid of, Mitch. We are on his radar now.
Rapp tossed some grated cheese in the pan and shook it to release the egg from the surface. Do we know where Zaman and El-Hashem are?
Zaman's in Brussels, staying in an upper-floor hotel suite. He doesn't have a checkout date, so I can't tell you when he's planning on leaving or where he's going when he does.
El-Hashem is at his house in Paris and working his regular job at the embassy. He has two full-time security men living on the premises, both of whom also act as drivers. There's a wall around the property as well as cameras and alarms. About what you'd expect. Nothing special.
What about Nassar?
On his way to London.
Why?
I don't know.
Rapp slid the omelette onto a plate and put it in front of her. She examined it for a few seconds before digging in.
Not bad, she said, sounding a bit subdued.
Given the situation, it was understandable. I'm a man of many talents.
I suppose so.
Now tell me what you want to do about the things that don't involve breakfast.
First, get in touch with Grisha and tell him he might have a run-in with Nassar in London. After that, we're going to prioritize Zaman. I want to get face-to-face with him before Nassar can get rid of him or pull him back to Saudi Arabia.
And El-Hashem?
Rapp would have liked to move simultaneously against the man, but without access to the agency's manpower, it wasn't going to happen.
He's going to have to wait.
Can you get surveillance on him? Maybe try to get his personal phone and email?
He hated relying on her people, but there was no other option. His contacts were more reliable, but they were also connected to intelligence agencies across the globe. A lot of them owed him their lives and would be willing to repay that debt, but he wasn't looking to call in those markers.
I have someone good in Paris, Claudia said through a full mouth. What about the others on my list?
Do what you can, but keep it low-key. We don't need to spook anyone. Not yet.
The muffled sound of a phone ringing interrupted him, and he waited for her to dig it out of her robe. After a quick look at the screen, she picked up.
Bonjour, chérie. Comment ça va?
Unquestionably, Anna. Claudia insisted that they communicate with her only in French in an effort to ensure her continued fluency.
Why can't you sleep? No. I find that hard to believe. Irene has a great deal of security, and her people would sweep for closet monsters every afternoon. It's standard procedure.
Yes, but have you brought this up with Tommy?
Oh, he does.
I see.
I don't...
Yes, he is, but...
Sweetie, you...
Okay, fine.
Claudia held out the phone.
She wants to talk to you. She says you know how to handle these kinds of things.
Chapter 33. London, England.
And now I'm told I shot an innocent man, Grisha Azarov said, leaning forward and putting his face in his hands.
The psychologist sitting across from him wore a perfectly calibrated expression of sympathy, as he should at the prices he was charging. But, Grisha, that man is going to survive, and the terrorist holding him was gravely injured by the same bullet. The authorities have given me access to the files describing what happened in Monte Carlo, and your actions were nothing short of heroic. Your cool head saved lives. You need to focus on that. Azarov didn't bother to look up, having already examined every detail in the bland office. What else was there to do during these mind-numbing meetings? Grisha? He tried to come up with something convincing to say. These sessions were critical to the fiction he'd created in Monaco, and there was no guarantee that a foreign intelligence agency wouldn't get hold of the notes from them. He'd done everything possible to look like an amateur. Awkward sprints, suboptimal shots, and terrified expressions. There was no telling if it would be enough, though. So now he was here, dealing with non-existent feelings of fear, guilt, and lingering panic. It was really quite laughable. His ability to conjure these emotions was so limited that he'd been forced to spend hours watching footage of people with PTSD and practicing in the mirror. Kara would have been quite impressed with his performance, he imagined. She was always trying to get him to share feelings that existed only in her imagination.
It's not just the hostage, Grisha said finally.
He would have liked to get some tears flowing, but the only thing that had the power to do that was onions.
It's the terrorists. Please, go on. I know they're evil. I've spent my career in the Middle East. But they're also human beings. How can I understand where they came from, what they've been taught from the time they were children? I don't even know if they fully understand their actions. And I killed them.
Taking a human life is one of the most traumatic things a person of conscience can do. But you have to acknowledge that those men had no intention of ever leaving that place. They...
Azarov tuned the man out and glanced at the clock.
10 more minutes until the session was finished.
He'd soon leave London, arguing that he needed a change of scenery and to avoid the potential spotlight. The authorities had agreed to keep his identity confidential, but there was always the concern that cell phone footage would surface. Kent and Donatella were already taking a circuitous route back to Africa. Mitch and Claudia would soon follow. The question was, would he do the same? He still wasn't sure the benefits of his involvement outweighed the risks. Unquestionably, Mitch Rapp's gratitude might prove valuable one day. But there was more. On some level, he missed the excitement. No, excitement wasn't the right word. The challenge. The thrill of being able to do things that only 3 or 4 men on the planet would even attempt. But maybe it was time to consider going home. Rapp wouldn't be pleased, but he was a man of honor. They would shake hands and part ways amicably. He pondered the issue while his therapist continued to drone on, finally deciding to stand with Rapp and his people. After the operation was done, he would return to his life with Kara. He'd surf and work on his house. He'd make normal friends and tour all the places he'd been to but never really seen. He'd let her give away a significant portion of his hard-earned fortune to the poor. And he'd forget everything he'd once been. "I think we're reaching the end of our time," the psychologist said. The man's words pulled Azarov back to the present, and he stood, extending a hand.
"Thank you, Doctor. I'm finding these sessions to be very helpful."
"Same time tomorrow, then."
"I look forward to it."
He strode from the office and exited into a light London rain. The narrow side street was choked with parked cars, but otherwise empty as he started along the sidewalk. When he came up behind a black limousine, the rear window opened.
"Mr. Azarov, may I have a moment of your time?"
"Who are you?" he said,
displaying the expected confusion. My name is Ali Nassar. I'm the director of Saudi intelligence. Claudia had emailed about this. Prince bin Musaid had been killed, but apparently not before naming Nassar as the man behind the financing of ISIS. She'd been concerned that he might try to make contact while he was in London, and it seemed that her concerns were well-founded. Azarov let recognition slowly register in his expression.
Of course. I work with your colleague, the energy minister.
I'm aware of that, he said, opening the door.
Would you like to get out of the rain for a moment?
Azarov shrugged and slid into the vehicle's luxurious interior.
First, Nassar said, how are you? Praise Allah that you survived your ordeal in Monaco. Still, it must have been a very difficult experience for you.
His tone suggested that he wasn't entirely convinced by the explanations of Azarov's success against a group of heavily armed terrorists.
Thank you for your concern, but I'll be fine.
Good. That's good.
Nassar paused for a moment.
Your performance was quite impressive. I imagine that the Russians will be quite disappointed that you went into consulting and not the military.
A leading comment that couldn't be ignored.
Because I do much of my work in unstable countries. My company has spent a great deal of money teaching me to defend myself. And I was an athlete in my youth. A heart condition kept me from turning professional, but I still train recreationally. It proved quite helpful.
And the weapon you used? My analysts were intrigued.
It was made for me by a gunsmith recommended by my shooting instructor.
Do you have it with you? I'd love to see it. Azarov shook his head.
I have a special permit to carry it in Monaco. Getting a similar permit in England is next to impossible. However, I can give you the name of the woman who made it, if you'd like. Her work is second to none.
Nassar fell silent, and Azarov met the man's intense stare with a softer one of his own. The intelligence director was trying to let the silence become uncomfortable enough for Azarov to offer more, but he wasn't going to play that game. The less he said, the better. Finally, Nassar pulled out a tablet and held it up. The photo was of Donatella standing at the bar, speaking with Prince bin Musaid.
Do you recognize either of these people?
I remember the woman. It would be difficult not to.
Did she survive?
Yes.
And the man?
Prince Talal bin Musaid. I'm afraid he did not.
I don't recognize the name. Please give my condolences to his family.
Nassar flipped to another photo, and Azarov allowed a hint of fear to register. It depicted Rapp dragging bin Musaid toward the door. The photo was blurred from movement, and Rapp was doing everything possible to keep his face out of the camera.
I have trouble sleeping, Azarov said. When I wake up, it's this man. And not the terrorists, I see. He aimed right at me and fired. I thought I was dead, but he missed.
Azarov looked away for a moment as though he was struggling to get his throat to produce sound.
Do you know who he is? We have suspicions. If I were to bring you a better photo, do you think you could identify him?
Yes, I believe so.
Nassar tapped the glass next to him.
It appears to have stopped raining. I appreciate your time, Mr. Azarov, and your heroism.
Nassar watched the Russian go, studying his athletic gait as he hurried along the sidewalk. It seemed extraordinary that he could have done what he had in Monaco, but everything he said checked out. He was indeed the semi-retired CEO of a highly respected energy consulting firm and a personal friend of Saudi Arabia's oil minister. He had spent a significant amount of time at combat shooting school, and his athletic prowess as a youth was well documented. had a little luck, and it wasn't impossible. It was, however, improbable. He looked down at the tablet just as the photo of Mitch Rapp went black. They now had incontrovertible evidence that Bin Musaid was alive when he left the bar. And that forced Nassar to assume that Rapp knew of his involvement. What would the CIA man do? Was he indeed rogue, or did he have the clandestine support of the agency? Would he dare attempt to assassinate the director of Saudi Arabian intelligence? It was possible, but unlikely that even Rapp would be that rash. It seemed more likely that he'd first look for proof. And with Bin Musaid dead, that meant moving against Nassar's closest associates. He reached for a button between the seats and lowered the glass separating him from his driver. Are our people in place in Brussels? They're still making preparations, sir, but I've been assured that all will be ready when you arrive. Chapter 34 Brussels, Belgium. The rain in Brussels was coming down much harder than it had been in London. Heavy droplets fell on the windshield, threatening to overwhelm the nondescript Citroën's wipers. An ideal environment for the tragic but necessary event to come. Having completed the money transfer to ISIS, Maya Zaman was staying in a hotel a few kilometers to the north. Nassar's staff had created a plan to bring him back to Saudi Arabia, where he could be protected, but that strategy required a careless arrogance that was not one of Nassar's failings. How many times had Mitch Rapp's targets been put behind impenetrable security, only to end up missing or dead? As difficult as the decision had been to make, Zaman had to be moved permanently beyond Rapp's reach. His driver dialed the phone with one hand and spoke quietly. 1 minute out. When the call was disconnected, he glanced over at Nassar in the passenger seat. With due respect, sir, there's no reason for you to be personally involved in this. My people can deal with it quickly and quietly without putting you in danger. Noted. They pulled into an alley that ran behind the hotel, and Nassar stepped out. The service door immediately opened, and he entered a utilitarian corridor. To his right, one of his men was closing a door leading to the security guard charged with monitoring the hotel's myriad security cameras. The recording function had been disabled, and the man was lying face down at his desk with a bullet hole in his head. They entered a service elevator, and Nassar tried to maintain his calm facade as it rose. He was allowing his personal feelings to force an obvious error. His people should have been handling this while he made his way back to Saudi Arabia. Zaman would have felt nothing as he was sent on his journey to paradise. And when he arrived, he would understand that his death was necessary in the battle against the enemies of God. The doors slid open, and Nassar's man checked the hallway before motioning him forward. Fortunately, the entrance to Zaman's suite wasn't far, and as in the alley, the door opened just before Nassar arrived. Ali, Zaman said, embracing him. I'm happy to see you so soon after our last meeting. As am I, old friend. I understand everything went smoothly. It was a simple matter, he said, ushering Nassar and his men into the room. In affairs like these, Maya, I'm afraid nothing is simple. The man's smile faded. What do you mean? I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but we have reason to believe that the CIA is aware of your involvement. The CIA? How? I followed your instructions to the letter. It had nothing to do with a failure on your part, just the fortunes of war. Are you here to take me back to Saudi Arabia? He said, starting to sound a bit panicked. The CIA kidnaps people from Europe. We must— Maya, be calm. We've had a long and close friendship. More than that, you've been of great service to me and to God.
I would never allow you to fall into the hands of the Americans. Nassar gave a subtle nod to the man who had taken a position 3 meters to Zaman's left. When he pulled a silenced Glock from his jacket, Zaman registered the movement in his peripheral vision. Fortunately, there was hardly even enough time for surprise to register on his face before a round hit him in the temple. Nassar stood motionless as his man lifted Zaman's corpse into a chair and began securing it there with a roll of tape. "Sir," he said, "there's no reason for you to be part of this. You should go." Nassar nodded and turned toward the door. The war against Mitch Rapp had begun. The former CIA agent was aging and suffering from a lifetime of injuries that would have killed a normal human being. More important, he appeared to be isolated, not only from Scott Coleman and his team, but also from the brilliant strategist Irene Kennedy. Would it be enough? Would Ali Nassar be remembered by history as the man who finally defeated the American? Or would he just be another entry on the list of his victims? Claudia parallel parked the car at the mouth of the alley and turned off the ignition. The rain immediately filled the windshield, and she left the headlights on to dazzle anyone who might glance in their direction. "My people have been through the hotel's service area a number of times. The corridor you'll be walking through isn't well-traveled, but even if you do pass someone, it shouldn't be a problem. The hotel has over 100 employees, with a fair amount of turnover. No one will give you a second look. 4 security guards in total, none with any combat or law enforcement background. 3 of them will be on the move, and 1 will be watching the monitors. He'll be in a room to your right as you walk in." She handed Rapp a keycard. "This will open every door in the building."
"You're sure?"
"Of course I'm sure. I've done this before, you know."
He did know, and so far she performed flawlessly. But that, and his feelings for her, didn't obscure the fact that it took only 1 mistake. How many of his friends and enemies were dead because of a jammed gun, faulty radio, or wrong turn? What about Zaman's security? "Just the 1 driver, and he's on the other side of town buying gifts for Zaman's family. I have a man tailing him, so we are getting real-time updates on his location. If he starts coming in our direction, I'll let you know. Now, let's test your phone link." She dialed, and he picked up on the Bluetooth headset in his ear. It was one of the benefits of the modern world. Tactical communication devices had become common in the civilian population.
"Can you hear me?" she asked.
"Yeah, you're good. How's the signal inside?"
4 bars in the area you're entering and the service stairs. 5 everywhere else."
"Then we're ready." He reached for the door, but she grabbed his arm.
"Mitch, I think this is a mistake."
She was probably right, but they didn't have a lot of options. Nassar already knew enough to have paid Azarov a visit, and that made it almost certain that he had enough intel to know that Bin Musaid wasn't dead when Rapp carried him out of Terry's. The Saudi intelligence director would err on the side of caution and assume the prince had given him up. That meant he was either going to get rid of Zaman or put him under lockdown in Saudi Arabia. Their window of opportunity was closing fast.
"It'll be fine. Just keep your eye on Zaman's driver."
Rapp pressed the keycard against the reader, and as promised, the lock slid back. He pulled the rain-soaked fedora a little farther down his forehead and went inside. The passage was as described, but the level of activity wasn't. Instead of being empty, with an overweight rent-a-cop sequestered in a monitor-lined room, there were 2 men on their knees, trying to get the security office door unlocked. They were speaking Dutch, but it was clear that they were concerned that they couldn't raise the man inside. If this had been a CIA op, he'd have aborted, but he wasn't working under agency protocols anymore. He was a criminal, and a desperate one at that. "Entering the stairwell," he said quietly,
I just passed two men trying to get access to the security office.
Trying to get access? Claudia responded immediately. The door was closed and locked? Get out of there, Mitch. Now, while there's still time.
Negative. I'm proceeding up. The possibility that the malfunctioning door was a coincidence was 1,000 to 1, but you never knew when you were going to get lucky. All he needed was a few minutes alone with Saman. He might be a fanatical ally of Ali Nassar, but at his core, he was a rich piece of shit who would probably never spend a night on unmonogrammed sheets. It was unlikely that it would take more than a few slaps to give him diarrhea of the mouth. Rapp arrived at the door leading to the top floor hallway and paused for a moment, exiting the stairwell. Claudia acknowledged but didn't say anything further. He knew she was scared, but she was dealing with it. Another check in her plus column. There was a single man coming down the hallway toward him, Middle Eastern, dark suit, athletic build. The bad signs just kept piling up. He didn't seem to want to make eye contact, so Rapp went with it, reaching up to shake some water off his hat in a way that obscured his face further. There was a window at the end of the hall, and Rapp followed the man's reflection in it. He disappeared around the corner, without ever showing any interest. The presidential suite was on the left, and entry went smoothly with Claudia's keycard. When the door was only half open, Rapp spotted Zaman's body lashed to a chair. He considered chasing the man he'd just passed, but he was probably already in the elevator. There might still be time to catch him with a sprint down the stairs, but then what? A shootout in the lobby with no backup or political cover? Rapp opened his mouth to tell Claudia to follow the man, but then closed it again. If Nassar was behind this, there was no telling what kind of resources he had and how much he knew. She wasn't scout. She could get hurt. "Are you in?" came Claudia's voice over his earpiece. Rapp stepped inside and closed the door behind him. "Saman's dead."
"You're getting out then, right? Tell me you're on your way back to the stairs."
"That's an affirmative."
"Don't lie to me, Mitch. I'm the only person you've got right now. I need to know where you are."
"2 minutes, and then I'm out." Saman had been tied and killed with a single shot to the head. That was only the tip of the iceberg, though. Another bullet had shattered his kneecap and 3 of his fingers were lying on the floor. Had someone really been forced to work this hard to get information from a wealthy middle-aged real estate developer? The likely answer was no. And that meant serious trouble for him. "Get in touch with the man you've got setting up surveillance on El Hashem in Paris," Rapp said. "Tell him to watch his ass. If Nassar's willing to take out his best friend, he'll go after the others."
"I'm going to call him off, Mitch. He's a thief, not a shooter."
"Your asset. Do what you think is right." A quick search of the suite turned up nothing, and he was already exiting back into the hallway when Claudia told him his 2 minutes were up. He'd made it about halfway to the stairs, when 2 security men appeared around the corner.
"Sir," one said in English as they closed in, "may we have a word with you?"
"Pardon?"
Rapp said in native French. The man he'd passed earlier had called security on him. Clever little bastard. The guard stopped in his path, and the one on the right repeated the request in French.
"Is there a problem?" Rapp said, smiling easily. "Are you a guest of this hotel?"
"Yes, why?"
"May we see your key?"
Rapp fished around in his pocket and held it out. He despised dealing with men like this. Killing was quick and easy, but incapacitating was complicated and time-consuming.
"What room are you?"
Rapp grabbed him by the front of the shirt and pulled him into a half-speed elbow strike. He crumpled to the floor as his partner looked on wide-eyed. Instead of attacking, he turned and tried to run. Rapp kicked his back foot and followed him down. A careful blow to the back of his neck had the desired effect, and a moment later Rapp was running down the hall.
"Mitch," Claudia said over his earpiece, "are you all right?"
"Yeah, but I'm going out through the lobby. Security's onto me, and I'll be better off mixing with the crowd."
"Understood.
I'm on my way to pick you up.
He dropped the coat and hat that he assumed security had a description of, and hoped to hell that Nassar's people had done a thorough job of sabotaging the hotel's cameras. He stepped into the elevator and pressed the button for the lobby. It stopped halfway down, and a couple in their 70s got in. He asked them if they were familiar with any good restaurants in the area, starting a conversation that continued after the doors were open. Security would be looking for a lone man in a coat and hat, not a man in a gray sweater who was part of a group of three. He thanked them for the advice when they exited into a covered driveway and walked to the curb as Claudia pulled up. The attendant opened the door and Rapp slipped him €5 before getting in the car. An average tip for a hotel of that quality. Nothing he'd remember one way or another. Claudia gave him the expected kisses on both cheeks, and then eased the car back onto the street. Chapter 35. Paris, France. The leafy street was empty of traffic this time of night, and Julien Moreau walked casually along it. Streetlights were widely spaced, and because the mansions that lined the avenue were set back behind walls, the environment was pleasantly shadowed. Normally that would have put him in danger of stepping in one of the piles of dog shit so common throughout the city, but the wealthy residents kept their avenues spotless. In truth, it probably wasn't that arduous a task. Arabs were about the only people who could afford to live in this neighborhood, and they didn't much care for dogs. A cultural quirk that made his job so much easier. An ancient stone wall appeared to his right, and he ran his hand along it, counting steps. It was well maintained, but had been left rustic, with the jagged edges and receding mortar lines that thieves like him deeply appreciated. Cameras were also conspicuously absent, except for over a gate more than 50 meters away. The obsession people had with looking at people arriving at their entrances never ceased to amaze him. If someone pulls up to your fucking gate and rings your buzzer, there's a good chance they're not coming to steal your daughters. When Moreau counted his 13th stride, he turned and grabbed a protruding stone in the wall. The shoes he was wearing were favored by climbing guides, tight and sticky enough to scale cliffs, but not so uncomfortable as to make it difficult to run. He moved quickly up handholds he'd memorized from a laser scan done the day before. In less than 5 seconds, he was at the top and looking for a way down. The inside had been stuccoed in order to complement the modern house beyond, but it wasn't a problem. The landscaper had placed trees in ideal positions for anyone trying to gain access. Moreau slithered down one and crouched behind its trunk, taking in his surroundings. The house was basically a big glass box, one of those homes that looked very prestigious in architectural drawings, but that no one in their right mind would want to live in. The lights were on, providing a view right through it. The kitchen was empty, with a similarly uninhabited pool area glowing behind. Ahmed El Hashem, Saudi Arabia's assistant ambassador to France, was sitting at a desk on the upper floor, writing in longhand. Apparently he could afford to live in this neighborhood, but couldn't afford a laptop. Or a decent security system, as it turned out. According to Moreau's source, namely the man who did the install, it was all off-the-shelf crap. Even better, the owner had insisted that it not be obtrusive, which wasn't easy in a fishbowl where everything was visible. So basically, nothing that would come even close to challenging a man of Moreau's talents. In fact, it was unlikely he would have even taken a mind-numbing job like this one, if it hadn't been for two irresistible factors. One, it had finally given him an excuse to use the 3D laser scanner he'd stolen from the university. And two, Claudia Gould. What words were sufficient to describe the woman? Sublime? Brilliant? Stunning? Mysterious? He could go on all night and never even scratch the surface. Those eyes. That body. And okay, the kid. But that's what boarding schools were for.
Moreau had done a fair amount of work for her in the past, but figured he'd never hear from her again after her husband died. Then out of nowhere, the phone rang, and the voice